Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
And I'm very glad to welcome today's speaker, Gavin Colborne. Gavin is the managing director at Little Forest, a service provider that focuses on accessibility solutions for universities. Gavin is passionate about making the web accessible and inclusive for everyone. He is excited to be immersed in the field of web governance and WCAG compliance for universities and multinational organizations. So, Gavin, I'm just going to pop you right in here. I'm going to stop sharing so you can go ahead and get your presentation started. And nice. Yep. And just right before I do that, I just want to let everyone know if you have any questions during Gavin's presentation, please pop them up on the Q&A section. It makes it easier for us to track them. And yeah, take it away, Gavin.
Thank you, Paula. Thanks also very much to Chris and Amber for inviting me. And it's an absolute pleasure. We met in WP Campus last year with Blake as well, who's also on the call. It's certainly my pleasure. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Hello, everybody. So today's talk is certainly around WordPress and accessibility from a slightly different perspective. So I'm just going to share my screen. Paula, can you see my screen? It's got Equalize Digital and Little Forest logos there. Brilliant. Thank you so much. So what we're going to talk about today is what we work on with a lot of universities, both in North America and in Europe, and that is what's called a web registry. Now, as you probably know, a lot of universities actually use WordPress a great deal to run the websites that are for their prospective students, for their staff as well. And so what I'm just going to talk about is a little bit about what a web registry is, how it helps, and so forth. So as we go through, please do let me know if you've got any questions as well. This is me on holiday with my five children, just a photograph of us at a water park. So yeah, having lots of fun in these days. A little bit of a blurb about me that Paula's already kind of read out. I am very involved in web accessibility, mainly working with the central accessibility teams for universities. And we help them to really maintain the accessibility and improve the accessibility of their websites. We do that really through mainly automated scanning in terms of finding the automated score as a good place to start on an accessibility journey and a good place to start making a website accessible. Obviously, we would recommend to do manual testing after the automated testing is complete. One of the reasons we do a lot of automated testing is for the scale. And that's where the web registry also comes in a lot, is that universities are where the internet really started. And as such, they have typically thousands of websites. Several hundred of those websites will often run on WordPress. And they'll be in multiple different hosts, multiple different providers, lots of different versions, some of those versions being very old. Obviously, then from that, you get lots of different WordPress plugins and lots of different themes with a vast array of accessibility challenges in and amongst that estate. And that's really where we work and operate. And that's my primary area of interest, and I believe that we're building slowly best practices around how to manage incredibly large web estates. We work with several accessibility teams, and I really want to share that with you today. It's very much an ongoing journey. We started this particular piece of work about 7 or 8 years ago. Funnily enough, with John Lockhart's team at the University of Edinburgh. And since then, we've started to then work with multiple other university accessibility teams around the world to work out actually how to tackle and improve accessibility, not just across the main website of a university, but across all of the other websites that have been created. And those websites typically tend to be research websites or one-off event websites and so forth. But before we talk about all of that, I want to talk a little bit about digital maturity. The entire world is really now digital, particularly after the pandemic and everything. Everything has gone online, even more so than before. And what has also happened is that we've created a vast amount of what I call digital litter. And this litter of web pages and websites causes a lot of various issues. I like to think of as I've been working in the web since around 1995. It's quite a long time. It's most of the time that the web's really been around. However, I feel as an industry, we are very immature. And I'd like you to think about if you compared us as an industry to something like construction or to the healthcare industry or indeed to travel, the way that they have processes and standards and the way they work is really predictable. And what that predictability creates is a vast level of quality, usually. And I feel that's where we as a web industry need to move to. And I think the way to achieve that is that we need to really focus on standards. And I believe that the best standard from a web perspective to focus on is the WCAG 2.2. And that if we focus on that, we can move forward. It's great to see that things like the ADA recently in April in the US has passed the update to align with WCAG 2.1. And I think that's the way to go forward. I believe that legislation is helping. We've also seen that a lot in the UK. As a public sector, you now have to comply with the WCAG 2.1. Very excitingly, Europe is launching the EAA, or the European Accessibility Act, in June 2025. So it's already signed off, this act. It will become law from June, so it'll be enforceable from June next year. And that means anyone who's providing a service in Europe has to have a WCAG compliant website. And that is beyond public sector. It is including the private sector, which is fantastic. So legislation is helping to make us make better websites, which is a great thing. So I just want to show you a quick audit as an example to give you some figures to think about how big these web estates have become in universities. And it doesn't matter which country you look at or which university, they will have a vast website. So I've got some UK universities here, for example. This is Oxford, you know, sort of 90 plus thousand websites. Edinburgh, you know, sort of around 50 odd thousand websites. If you look at the US, you know, Stanford plus 100,000 sites. Now, these numbers are actually created from a variety of sources, particularly the domain name services for DNS registries. And these are just like subdomains, for example, of stanford.edu. And when you then go through that data, the numbers will go down slightly and you'll start to qualify. And from that, you'll start to then be able to break out which of these thousands of websites are running WordPress, as an example, and then what version of WordPress are they running? What plugins are they running? What themes are they running? How? What is their accessibility score for each of those sites? We're talking about really huge digital estates. And the funny thing is that each of those sites obviously will typically have a content management system like WordPress behind it. And the challenge that we have in these organizations is that the ownership is really unclear. Often you will have found that in a university, someone has been awarded some money to do some research into some fantastically interesting area. As part of that research, they actually will, in the agreement, have some money set aside to create a website, and that website will get launched when they launch their research. And often that site will be built in a way that is not actually best practice and not compliant with WCAG. And is not very accessible. And What happens is often that person then moves on, gets a job, leaves the university, but the website remains. And so when really for the university, that's a difficult piece to know what to do with. So we really work on trying to find clear ownership in order to then improve the quality of the site. What this does do is also, it can create a poor customer experience, because if somebody is searching on a particular set of keywords for a university and they find one of these sites, that's not exactly the experience that the university would like them to have always. And often that actually will make the university not be compliant with the law as well. So how can you manage a web estate? You really need to start with a web registry. And so what is a web registry? It's a master record of truth of all the websites that belong to a university or to an organization. And it records the web address and who's responsible for the site. So why is a web registry important? There are many reasons. Accessibility, we believe, is the most important one. There are also other benefits, though. So being compliant with information security and privacy, making sure that the site is performing, that is of the right quality for your brand, for your audience, that the content is up to date. And also what I like to think of as the new kid on the block in terms of best practices and how to build a website, which is web sustainability. There's a lovely link between the best practices that are coming out in web sustainability and the best practices that we know and love in accessibility. And there is a W3C working group that is now formed around sustainability, and it's taking a lot of lessons from the WCAG as well. So why domain knowledge matters? Firstly, for us, most importantly, it's to ensure the accessibility of the web estate. I believe that if we focus on the accessibility, everything else will improve. I believe that accessibility first creates usability first, thanks to the standards and the good working practices that people have outlined in WCAG. So how do we do the domain discovery in order to create a web registry? This is basically, how do we find all of these websites that a university or any organization owns? So we do what's called a vertical and a horizontal domain discovery. A vertical, the example is google.com has a subdomain, maps.com. It may also have a subdomain of like email.google.com and so forth. And then we look at that as vertical. Google also own other domains like gmail.com, google.cz, youtube.com. And we look at the registrar information of the main site. This might be like stanford.edu, for example. And we will then take that registrar information and look for other top-level domains that they own. And you can then enumerate those domains to get the subdomains of the main domain. And what this does is actually build up a very large data set of websites. We then send a browser to each of those websites and do automated testing. So we'll run accessibility testing against that. And you'll then get an accessibility score for each of those hundreds or thousands of websites. We also look at it for completeness. We really want to find every website possible for an organization. And so that means we need to look at data from all sorts of areas. We'll look at search engine results. We do what's called common word lists. We look at SSL certificate entries as well. And every month we will rerun a domain discovery and we'll tell an organization, okay, we found five new websites this month. Would you want to look at them from a perspective of how compliant they are? Are they necessary for staying in your domain? So I just wanted to show you how bad some of these sites are and some of the problems they could cause beyond just even accessibility. Here's some examples. You're probably familiar with, you've seen many sites that do these. I'm showing here now some screenshots using the Chrome browser, and they are showing things like the connection is not private, attackers might be able to steal your information. Bear in mind, these would be websites that are clearly coming off the main site of a big university, for example. Showing another screenshot here of a Google search, And it's showing that in the results for the search term, that Google is warning the potential visitor that this site may harm your computer. And that's because Google's picking up wrong sort of quality of files. It might be viruses and so forth that are present on the website. Further sort of challenges, again, in the Chrome browser, showing a screenshot of phishing attack ahead. So really, this if someone's receiving messages like this when they're trying to visit a website, this is going to really put them off. One, the establishment, it's going to make them concerned. It's not what a brand would want people to go through. Often the sites will contain malware, as we know with WordPress and all other CMSs. As the version of them ages, they will become more prone to having plugins attacked, having themes attacked, and vulnerabilities found as well. And those through those vulnerabilities, people can then install malware and actually take over vast sections of a website. So there's a large amount of kind of information and security challenges to owning a lot of websites as well. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about what universities do with a web registry. So here are some common use cases. They will often recommend a website into accessibility remediation based on an automated accessibility score. So we'll find that many of the institutions we work with will, based on the accessibility score, find, let's say, 50 websites, and they will recommend that they get remediated from accessibility perspective in order to improve those scores. So if the score is below, let's say, 80%, that might be the threshold that they use to say, we need to improve this website. And that's a really helpful thing. Sometimes, and this is a nice kind of easy one in a way, is that they might recommend a site is closed down by IT just because it's no longer needed, or it's really not meeting the quality. They can't find the person who owns the site anymore, and so forth. Also, sites are now archived, which is a good thing. So we in the UK have something called the UK National Archive, where we're archiving all the public sector content as well. And you've got archive.org, which is doing a great job on that too. You might find that the organization will want to identify a number of websites and consolidate them into a central CMS. That CMS could be WordPress. They could also find a lot of their WordPress sites on different versions and want to move them all to a more centralized service, still running WordPress, but in a more secure, more compliant, more accessible, centralized platform. Often with a web registry, we can do what we call a code search across a web registry, and we can then look for common plugins and components that may be deployed very widely across the estate and have accessibility concerns. You might have a slider, that slider is not compliant. So we want to find where that is in order to then remediate and fix and improve that slider. In the UK, we, by law for public websites, need to have an accessibility statement. And the accessibility statement is a particular template from the UK government. And it basically tells you to outline how accessible your website is, what your plan is for your website to improve the accessibility, who owns and who to get in touch with from an accessibility perspective, and so forth. So what we use with the web registry is to show you what accessibility statements you have in your estate, which sites don't have an accessibility statement, and so forth.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
We're finding that healthcare globally is becoming a bigger issue as well. And more people are needing to find which of their websites is talking about healthcare, even just from a marketing perspective. And we need to make sure that those sites are built in the right way. So often we'll use a web registry to find where are the sites that are of particular interest as well. So a look at some of the useful reports. And this is a screenshot of a typical web registry. And what it has is a table, and in the rows of the table is the URL of the website. And then you'll have columns with additional information for the website. And that could be the status code, such as a 404 is a broken link, or a 200 status code is a good responding website. We'll also look to associate all the other business metadata that we can find and identify, both through an automated process and through human addition as well, to that site. And that could be things like the site owner. What is the next step with this website? What category is it in? And so that could be this website's to be closed down, this website's to be remediated for accessibility. Another screenshot is really then just showing the websites by business area. So in a university, the university may have several colleges, several faculties, all of which will own a number of websites. And from a centralized team perspective, the accessibility teams we work with will often want to know, these are the various colleges that own 154 websites, or this college owns 52 websites, and so forth. So there's various ways that you can visualize and interrogate a registry. The code search that I mentioned is particularly useful. You can then look to see, you know, is there a privacy policy on this website? Is there a modern slavery statement? Are our standard terms and conditions referenced from these websites? And then you can take action from those areas as well. This is a further screenshot of a web registry, just really identifying that you can pull out further information for that. And everything is also versioned. So every time we visit these websites, we will notice what's changed and keep the version history. So you might see that a website has been upgraded automatically from WordPress version X to WordPress version Y in July 2024. And of course, being in 2024, no report would be complete without a mention of AI. We have started to work with using AI to look at the web registries and to actually complete the information further. And there's some amazing things that can be done now to understand a massive web estate. And I've listed some of the ones that I find useful here. These are reports that would be very difficult to do at scale even 2 or 3 years ago, before AI was really available. A lovely one is really, how inclusive is the language on this website? And you may want to then look at that as a score out of 100. You could also ask AI, you know, what audiences is this website excluding? You know, who should I consider more from an audience perspective to make this website more inclusive? You can look at it more from a brand perspective as well and say, you know, is this content on brand? You can ask, is there offensive content? You can provide summaries of the sites into topics and so forth. And you can look at things like tone of voice. Is a site, you know, gathering personal healthcare information and so forth? What AI has really started to do, we've seen, is allow us to complete web registries really quickly. Because we can take what you know about the sites that you do know about, and we can then cluster that information based on really similar websites that are out there, but you don't have a lot of information about them. And you can then get like a confidence score from AI as to this website's probably owned by this part of your university because it's talking about these topics, the URL looks like this and so forth. And I find that really exciting because it then kind of moves on to the, what we call the ultimate goal of creating a web registry. While it's great to have a list and it's really fun to look through all of these websites, it's very much like going through a museum of digital activity across your organization. The next step really is that we want people to migrate the sites that they find that are not accessible into a new platform that is accessible and is compliant. And that's the ultimate goal really, is that we want to measure how we improve. Like we've managed to, you know, take 100 websites that really were performing badly from an accessibility perspective and move them into a new place and improve them. That is, now we've taken 100 websites and they're now accessible, they're now compliant with WCAG, they're now available and inclusive for people. So I think that's really a much more important goal. And the web registry is just a way to start that journey as to then planning. It's a very helpful planning tool, effectively, on making very large web estate accessible. A brief look at some of the important learnings, I believe, in our journey so far, and it's very much an ongoing journey. We believe that if you have a web registry, that you can stay informed and in control of your entire web estate. You can understand the quality levels and accessibility of all your websites. You can monitor the customer experience by eliminating rogue websites. You can save time by automating and monitoring the changes. You can agree ownership of sites within your organization, and you can improve communication and control across your digital organization. Some best practices that we would recommend is to place responsibility into the hands of content editors. Content editors are often really keen on learning as much as they can about best practices, and that really includes accessibility as well. We believe that you should enforce training and accessibility and sustainability across all your content editing teams. You should put it into performance appraisals for your teams as well. And with working with universities, we've seen a lot of success in working with students with disabilities to test for accessibility as well, and to then feedback what are the barriers, what are the blockers, what are the challenges in these sites, in order to get those fixed and improved. Other best practices is really to involve other teams beyond your web team, beyond your content team. And those are people like who works in your brand team, people who work in your compliance team, risk and legal. We're finding that organizations are getting much closer digitally with these kind of teams, and the skill sets required, the communication required across the teams is very multidisciplinary. And it's a very interesting area to involve, and everyone then can see how they can benefit from each other of working together. And also always use the legal hammer. The law is so helpful. We should look at it as a helpful positive. It provides teeth for web accessibility, so site owners can really understand that they are responsible on behalf of an organization by law. And that's it for my presentation today. Please do get in touch with me if you would like a free domain discovery report. We'll happily look at that for your organization and tell you all the websites, the wonderful, and all that you have there. You can write to me directly, gavin@littleforest.co.uk as well. Paola, are there any questions so far?
Yes. So we had a question come in. Would such a register, which I'm guessing would be a web registry, be mandatory for private businesses as well? Is this like a quality label or ISO standard?
It isn't yet. That's an interesting thought to make it one, in the same way that web sustainability is working towards creating a standard as well. It's certainly helpful for private organizations, definitely. And we do work with a number of people like pharmaceuticals, who compliance is massively important, accessibility is massively important for them by law and also culturally with a lot of people in those organizations. So yes, a registry is a really good thing to have as a private institution as well.
Yes, I feel like it would make sense for anyone with many domains or many webs or many websites or pages to have a web registry. I'm looking to see if we do have any other questions come in. Stephanie asked, what is a slavery statement? I think you mentioned that.
Yes. So a lot of sites, I've seen it more in North America, have a modern slavery statement, and it's often, you know, in what I call the graveyard of governance, which is the footer of the website, will have the link to the accessibility policy, and you'll often find there a modern slavery policy as well. It's just another way of an organization stating their values, stating their goals as to how they operate, how their business runs effectively. So it's useful with a lot of organizations. They may want a modern slavery statement on every website, and they may want to make sure that it's linked to from every page as well.
Got it. Okay. We do have another question come in. Once you create the registry, can you drill down on a website to see what parts are inaccessible?
Yes, absolutely. So we'll typically start with an accessibility score, and we'll typically use ACTS now. It seems to be becoming more of a standard, but you can use WAVE or other similar tools that you prefer. And then from the score, you can then click and see, okay, these are the errors that we have on the site. These might be the warnings that need manual testing, or we would recommend manual testing as well. So you very much would typically start at the score and then drill further in. I'd definitely be interested to see if we could then do an integration with Equalize Digital as well, and you might have we might have a way to link from the site directly to your report if it's WordPress as well.
Yeah, and that's something that we don't have the technology or the infrastructure to achieve, is this amazing high level stuff that you're doing right now with Little Forest, which is really exciting to me. I did have a follow-up question about that, and it's more general, but what excites you most about this web registry thing that you're working on, and like the types of impact you're seeing it have maybe at an early stage, if there's anything you can share?
Three things for certain. One, the first moment that people see a web registry is really fun, because actually there's a lot of screenshots, and you find people get very involved. If they like that organization, they like that brand, and there's like 500 websites suddenly, they're like, oh my goodness, I didn't know this was all there. That's a brilliant moment. It's genuinely fun, like for anyone who's into the web and so on. And you, because you see just a whole plethora of things around your organization, which is great. That moment is wonderful. The next is then seeing what people do with it, like really taking it up. We've worked with a number of universities, and in the beginning I was like, I don't think they're going to do this. It's too big a task. It's too difficult. They've got too many other priorities. And I've been amazed that teams have taken this on and have made progress and are really categorizing everything up and then making sites more accessible, closing down websites that shouldn't be there anymore, that aren't working for people, or archiving sites where they have been useful, but going forward shouldn't be around. And I think the ultimate goal of this is the most exciting bit, which is I want to see accessibility at scale. I really believe that we're at a point where technology is ready, where we're ready from an education and cultural perspective. People know enough about web accessibility now to know that technically, usually a lot of the pieces are really straightforward to fix, because we can report on them really easily. And when you get down to the technical details, you can fix something. And often an error, an accessibility barrier or blocker will be on every web page in your website. So you fix it in one place, and you're actually removing that barrier across your whole site. And it's that improvement, I believe now, and I'm really encouraging our organizations that we work with to look at it more from a, how do we not just fix one website? How do we fix 100 of your websites this year? How do we take them and make them compliant? I believe also that we have a legislation that's really helping drive the culture, particularly in the public sector. The ADA update in April, I've seen a massive amount of energy behind that in the public sector in the US, which is great, and it's leading to change.
Yeah, that's really exciting, and I think what this web registry concept makes me think of is the idea of kind of looking under for the dust under your proverbial digital rug, right? These little pieces that have been left behind, like a trail of breadcrumbs as your online presence evolves, that are maybe forgotten. And I'm wondering if you've encountered any really odd or strange websites that end up getting archived, like the equivalent of Ling's Cars in the UK, if you know what that website is.
I don't know that one, actually. We honestly get so many funny sites in every registry, like Ling Cars. Okay. It's great to see, like, you'll see things that look like GeoCities from the 90s, and you'll have like an event from 13 years ago, and everything's changed. The branding has changed, the way we, you know, build the website's design has changed, and it's fun. So it's a bit like looking back in time often as well. Yeah. So I'll look up that Ling car websites.
I do have a question also. We have a question coming in from John. Can you talk a little bit about sustainability and how Little Forest is looking at it in your product development path, or at least what you can tell us about?
Absolutely. So John, yep, thank you. Sustainability, as I mentioned, is really interesting from an accessibility perspective, because all of the best practices in accessibility help sustainability. A great easy example that has a large impact is, for example, you should, from an accessibility perspective, always give control to the user. So don't animate any content, don't play a video by default, always give the control to the user. And so you can imagine, by doing that, you are using less energy in the transfer, and that's what is helping make your site better from a sustainability perspective. You want to lower the energy usage. And what I recommend to everyone who's trying to make their sites more sustainable and use less energy is also just make them accessible first, and you're going to improve the sustainability. We are working with a team in the University of Edinburgh who are outlining an approach to web sustainability. And we're then using a library called EcoGrader to then, in the web registry, create a sustainability score and further tips and tricks on how to make your site more sustainable too.
Great. So I do have a question. So you mentioned mostly running automated tests and putting a score to them. But when it comes to having the web registry in this very large websites, how do you approach manual testing?
Absolutely. So we would look at manual testing as a categorization in the web registry. So the team would say these 20 sites need to be manually tested for whatever reason they're deemed as more important. Perhaps the quality of them is of concern and so forth. And then you could add the manual accessibility summary notes to the registry. Typically, the manual process would go into its own best practice tool, and whichever team was doing the manual testing would be recording that testing in its own way. But we could create summaries of that in the web registry. Another simple example is just to record the date of when this site was manually tested, and to set a reminder to say we'd like to do another manual test in a year's time.
Oh, that's great. We do have a follow-up question to John. Stephanie asks, can you define sustainability? Is that in terms of like the energy it is using, climate change aspect, or something else?
Absolutely. So the interesting thing with for most of us that's surprising is that the internet is actually one of the largest consumers of energy on the planet. So as a, if you look at the internet as an industry, it's it consumed more energy than and does more carbon emissions as a result than the airline industry. So there's a lot of research as to why this is and how it is, but it's obviously all the data centers that are running, it's all the devices that we have, it's all the interconnectivity, the networks between them. So there's three areas where energy is used, and that's in the device, it's in the network, and it's in the servers as well. And so if you measure the energy use when you're looking at a single web page on your phone, you've got to look at it from three perspectives for energy use. And so you want to try and lower that energy in every place. So you want to have like a green, sustainable host with renewable energy. You want to use transfer as little data across the network as possible. And then you want to use some best practices on the client, which are things like accessibility. So improve the contrast is actually going to help reduce the energy as well. And so the web sustainability scores and best practices are around those three areas in particular.
That's great insight. I would have never considered that. Because every time we think of energy, we usually go to planes, combustion, but thinking about it this way, it makes a lot of sense. So we do have a question. Isn't the UK a forerunner in the EU as far as accessibility is concerned? I do know that the EU does have a huge proponent into going into web accessibility with the upcoming laws. So what would you say, where would you, do you see the UK standing?
Absolutely. It's hard to know if we're a the UK is a forerunner or Europe. They both are doing well in different ways. Slightly what I love about the upcoming European standards is it's beyond the public sector. I think that's really exciting. The only exception from the law is if you're an organization which has revenues of under 2 million euro a year or less than 10 employees. But otherwise, it's affecting everyone in the private sector as well. I think in the same way that GDPR for privacy was very much not just public sector, it's privacy is important for everyone. Accessibility is important for everyone. I think we should learn that GDPR was very successfully rolled out. And even though WCAG and accessibility are considerably older than GDPR, GDPR was very successful in terms of how it was implemented and launched. And I believe the EU are using and realizing a lot of those practices and from the legal side, how they implemented GDPR. And they're looking to do that and replicate that with accessibility, which is why the EAA, the European Accessibility Act, is very exciting. The UK has done a great job in terms of getting to pass the law of making all public websites accessible from around 2018. Very clear that it built in compliance with WCAG 2.1 AA from the start. So it's really helpful to have the standard mentioned in the law so that in any case, for a legal reason, you can then, you've got something to refer to as a benchmark. So I suspect the UK will also follow on from the European Accessibility Act and learn new areas as well.
Thank you so much. Though that was a really great presentation, Gavin, and really enjoyed this Q&A portion and getting an insight into university accessibility. So just a quick reminder, where can people find you?
Certainly, our website, littleforest.co.uk. You can email me directly, gavin@littleforest.co.uk. We'd love to have a conversation, very much do a free report for you as well, which will tell you all of the hundreds or thousands of sites that you have. So yeah, also if you just want to just generally talk about accessibility, we'd love to have that conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Gavin. And we're just going to give it a few seconds for the captions to come through. But we will see you again on our next meetup on Monday. Thank you so much, Gavin.
Thank you very much, Paola and Chris, and Equalize Digital for inviting me, and thanks for everyone for joining.
thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.